For many of us, seeing the beauty in other people, being kind and compassionate towards other people, that comes pretty easily. But what's really hard is seeing the beauty in ourselves and being kind and compassionate consistently towards ourselves, especially when difficult things happen. Perhaps someone's critical of us, or we make a mistake. We beat up on ourselves. You could call it the inner critic, or that voice in the head that says mean things. Or you could call it self-hatred. What can we do in these circumstances to interrupt this cycle and learn to befriend ourselves consistently? Sounds True has created the Self-Acceptance Project to investigate this question. We've invited the participation of spiritual teachers, psychologists, neuroscientists, visionary writers, all to look at how can we learn to be kind and compassionate towards ourselves on a consistent basis. Thank you for joining us and welcome. Today I speak with Judith Blackstone, a licensed clinical psychotherapist in New York and an innovative and experienced teacher in contemporary spirituality. Her published works with Sounds True include the books The Intimate Life and Belonging Here and the audio learning program The Realization Process. My name is Tammy Simon, and I'm your host for this series, and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Judith Blackstone. Welcome, Judith.
Thank you.
It's great to be with you, as always.
Thank you.
To begin with, I'd love to know how you approach this topic of self-acceptance. And you come, I know, in a unique way as somebody who teaches a spiritual process called the realization process. But you also work with individual clients. You work in a psychotherapeutic setting. And so I'm sure that you've worked with many, many people who have faced challenges related to self-judgment, self-criticism, self-blame, tremendous shame experiences. How do you approach this psychologically, spiritually, both? How would you frame the conversation even?
Well, first I want to say I think it's an extremely important topic and one that isn't often mentioned these days in our spiritual teachings in the spiritual field. I don't think that we can really reach the core of ourselves without self-acceptance. So it's extremely important. And in terms of how I approach it, it's both psychological and spiritual in the sense of attuning to the basic qualities of our being, because I feel that when we do that, when we uncover that qualitative experience of ourselves, so not just an idea of ourselves, but a qualitative experience of ourselves, then there's a very deep intimacy with ourselves, which is self-acceptance in itself, which is the basis, actually, I think even just as important as self-acceptance, and along with it is actually self-love and self-enjoyment.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about this, attuning to the quality of ourself, and that as a type of self-love or self-enjoyment. I'm not sure that people will know what you mean by attuning to a quality of self.
Yes, well, when we inhabit our body, when we actually live within our skin, and the interesting thing is that most of us don't. It's in fact a spiritual practice, something we have to kind of focus on for a while and practice on a regular basis in order just to live within our own skin rather than outside of ourselves, watching ourselves from outside. But when we live within our skin, we experience ourselves qualitatively, and by that I mean, for example, we can experience the quality of our love. I think most of us know that quality, Right? So it's not just an idea, but an actual welling up of a feeling, of a experience. But it turns out that all of the parts of our body and all of the parts of our being have qualities to them. For example, if we come into our midsection, we live in there, we uncover a feeling that feels like power, like pure power, like a waterfall kind of power, not power over someone, but pure power. And that's enlivening and supportive of ourselves. If we come into our pelvis, we experience our sexuality, our gender. If we come into our throat, we have a qualitative experience of our potential to speak. And if we come into our heads, we have a qualitative experience of our own intelligence. So these are ways we can really feel ourselves existing. And of course, various experiences come through, but these basic qualities are pretty much stable, and they produce altogether a palpable sense of our own being.
Okay, so when you say come into our head or come into our throat or our belly,
yes,
when you say come into, you mean bring our attention into the interior of the body? Is that what you mean?
Well, that's certainly the beginning of it. We need to bring our attention there, but then to actually feel present there, as if we were dwelling there, living there, as if we were that part of our body. For example, to come into your midsection begins with bringing your attention there, for sure, but then to inhabit that whole internal volume of the midsection feels like that midsection is part of who we actually are.
Okay, let's take a specific example of somebody who has a self-acceptance challenge. And I'm going to pick somebody who has a self-acceptance challenge with their body, with their
okay.
weight, let's say,
yes.
which is pretty
yes.
common. And here you are, and you're helping the person come into a sense of presence in the interior of a body that they're actually ashamed about. How does that
yes.
work when you work with somebody?
Yes, I mean, that's a very important part of the work, and so many of us are ashamed of something about our bodies. Here again, when we know ourselves from the inside, then the shape, even if there's disablement, whatever it is, doesn't matter in a way. We're experiencing that internal ground of ourselves. That internal ground, by the way, can be experienced even in someone who's lost the use of their legs. They can still experience that internal ground in their legs, which is an interesting thing. But to feel that internal wholeness, that internal cohesion, unity, and also to feel that there's actually love in there, and actually power and actually intelligence, so forth, begins to remedy the shame and begins to remedy the self-consciousness. Self-consciousness. I mean, one important thing about self-acceptance is that as we little by little do accept who we are, accept that we're not perfect, we are able to let people really see us, right? We can let people really look at us because there's nothing we're hiding. So, you know, I know when people look at me, they see certain things that are not like my favorite ideal sort of attributes, but there they are. That's just part of me. And so when I let people look at me, even if I don't let them, they still see me. But when I'm in the process of and the experience of letting people look at me, then I'm no longer self-conscious. Then I'm no longer trying to adjust myself to come off a little bit better. And so shame about oneself starts to, and of course this is all has to be prefaced with gradually, starts to gradually dissipate as we know ourselves from the inside and as we allow people to really see us. Now, when we allow people to really see us, we also are able to see them. We all together begin, again, gradually, not to get in our own way of experiencing life. And so we also see the people around us. And those people are also not perfect. right? And just like us, you know, they're beautiful in their imperfection. And so there's a kind of cumulative effect where we accept our own limitations and we accept others in the same way.
Now, is it fair to say, Judith, because in listening to you, it sounds to me like this, and tell me if this is accurate or not, that in your work you see the Holy Grail, if you will, as this embodiment process, this experiencing the substantialness of oneself on the inside as this Holy Grail that opens up self-love and connection with other people.
Yeah, you know, Holy Grail, actually for me, you know, if we're going to use that beautiful term, yeah. Holy Grail, for me, the Holy Grail is the transparency, the oneness that pervades oneself and others, that pervades all forms. That's the Holy Grail, that unified transparency. And embodiment is a path, a very effective path, I believe, to that transparency, to that oneness.
Okay, so I want to hear a little bit more about embodiment and how you might work with somebody, maybe a specific example of a client that has come to you with some type of real self-criticism or self-blame challenge, and how you would take them through this process.
So one-on-one work for me is a combination of listening, of people talking about themselves and knowing themselves that way, hearing themselves speak. Because so often we don't know what our negative beliefs are. We don't know how many we have until we actually hear them being received by another human being who's just sitting there fairly non-judgmentally receiving that. And then we can begin to hear ourselves. So that's a very important part of therapy, of one-on-one work, of personal growth work. So that's certainly part of it. That we get to hear just how often we put ourselves down. And some of our complaints, of course, are quite valid, and those need to be affirmed, and we need to, I believe, connect with the whole process that we've been through to survive, to come out with as much love, as much self-love and love for others as we do arrive with. That process of courage and navigation that we have all gone through as children. So I think that's a very important part of all this. And in self-accepting, in accepting our own narrative and having someone else also accept it, that goes certainly part of the way towards what we're talking about here. And the other part is, as I've been talking about, actual practice, which I call the realization process, as you know, of inhabiting the body, of actually finding ourselves deeper and deeper and deeper within our own being, and finally in that process, opening out into this this connection with others, this transparency.
Now, what about somebody who they go into their body, and here you are describing this experience, the inner inhabiting of the body as enjoyment and as feeling love, but what they feel inside is something that's not quite like that at all. They feel something terrible, actually,
yes.
Especially in the beginning. What about that?
Well, yeah, what about that? That's a very important part of the process. The reason that we don't live in our bodies, for the most part, is because we've had to close off ourselves to abrasive or destructive stimulation in our environment, especially when we were very young and impressionable. So we closed ourselves off against the impact of life, and against also our own self-expression, because it was not safe, not accepted. All of these things. So as we come back into our bodies, the first thing we generally find is pain. And we find exactly precisely the pain of our journey, which I think is a great improvement in the history of therapy. You know, I know for myself, 30 years ago, starting out hitting pillows and, you know, trying to get mobilized emotionally and all of these very hard-hitting techniques. And now we come to embodiment, where we come exactly to just how we closed off, exactly what was going on outside of ourselves as we did that, what was going on inside. And we begin to unfurl those holding patterns and the pain along with them. But definitely part of the process, I know it was for myself and for many of my students, many people come to my classes, they're sitting there and crying. You know, that is certainly part of the deepening, part of the getting to contact ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know now in your life, if you hit moments where you hear a negative voice inside you saying something quite mean to yourself or something like that, and if you do, what you do in those situations.
Yeah. I've got to say, it's so much rarer that it's nearly miraculous compared to where I've come from. I seem to have cultivated over the years some sort of sense of humor about myself and some actual acceptance of my many, many quirks. So it really doesn't happen very often. When it does, when I, you know, for example, mess up in an interview of this sort or something of that, and I'm like,
for example,
and I say something really ridiculous, and I'm like, well, you know, okay, you know, that's, you know, and I do seem to be able to go through a much quicker process of letting that go, of letting people see that. You know, teaching has helped a lot. You know, there's nothing quite as helpful as helping other people or trying to help other people, but letting myself be seen by people who are coming to me because I'm supposedly have gotten somewhere somehow, and letting them actually see me with all my limitations and flaws and so forth. And the love that comes out of that mutually between us, that has been extremely healing for me.
I wonder if you can repeat something for me, because I'm not quite clear on it, because you're making this very important connection between accepting ourselves and letting ourselves be seen by other people, not having to hide or pretend or...
Yes.
And can you help me understand how that works, how this greater self-acceptance works in terms of being transparent and available to others?
How it works. I'm not sure how to answer that, but please keep asking the question in various ways until I have answered it. One thing that happens when you live in your body, when you embody yourself, and again, this is a long, gradual process, but when you do find yourself living inside your body, is that you feel both empty, transparent, and you also feel present, right? So there's a palpable presence as well as a kind of emptiness, empty vessel kind of feeling. And those two experiences happen simultaneously. It's a very interesting thing. And so in doing that, in that sort of self-acceptance of being in oneself, we can accept the presence of others without being scattered, without fleeing, without abandoning ourselves. Does this start to answer what you're meaning?
Yeah, I'm definitely following you here.
Yeah, so that lack of self-abandonment, that, okay, this person has seen me, and, you know, when you work with people, they look at you very closely, and you see in their eyes, oh, they've just seen that about me, okay. And yet I'm still here. You know, I'm still hanging in there. I haven't abandoned myself. I haven't flown out of my body.
Yeah.
I'm still here. And that keeps the connection both with myself and with the other going.
It seems like what you're pointing to is a type of relaxation into that emptiness and presence that doesn't have the same need for everything to be measured and evaluated.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, you're the first person to talk about having a sense of humor about one's quirks and foibles and things like that. I'd love to hear more about that.
You know, before we began this interview, you asked me what was going on in my life, and I talked about that house that we just got. Well, I did an interview a few weeks ago. It wasn't a video interview, it was an audio interview. And I was going along pretty well, you know, pretty good. You know, she's asking very nice questions. I'm talking about my work. And at the very end of the interview, she says to me, so what are you excited about? What excites you in your life right now? And, you know, the right answer to that question is, you know, many things excite me, of course. And one of the things that excites me is seeing people come alive, you know, seeing people reach this transparency altogether. But no, what I said to her was, well, what excites me is we just got this house. Well, that's a silly answer. She contracted. I felt that. And, you know, it's just out of context. But that happened to be what was on my mind. So afterwards, you know, I thought, you know, missed an opportunity to talk about what excites me in terms of this work. And in terms of our spiritual field, so many things excite me. But that's what was on my mind. That's what it was. You know, she asked me, what excites you now? That's what excites me now. So, and so finally, I'd say it took about an hour. I just thought, that's just hilarious, you know. And that's what it is.
So when you say it took about an hour, what happened in that hour?
Well, in that hour, first I'm going over this little transaction between us, this exchange, and I'm thinking, that was really silly, you know. If only I had said this, or I could have said that. Then I told my husband about it. And he kind of shrugged his shoulders. That helps a lot. Helps a lot to have a good friend. And then finally, I just let it go. You know, it's just out there in the airwaves. That's what it is. And that's who I am. You know, I'm not always, you know, thinking about the most profound thing in the world. Sometimes I'm just thinking about some lovely thing that's come into my personal life. And that's how I am, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, Judith, from the excitement about your house to a book that you spent many years working on called Belonging Here, A Guide for the Spiritually Sensitive Person.
Yes.
I'm curious to hear a little bit about the spiritually sensitive person and how such a person, I mean, it'd be great for you to define what you mean by that, and how such a person might have different types of challenges with self-acceptance and what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah. For one thing, self-consciousness, which is in some sense the opposite of self-acceptance, right? Watching oneself from outside, thinking, you know, if I sat up a little straighter, if I did my hair a little bit like this, or these people are responding negatively to me, that kind of, and how can I avoid that? That kind of self-consciousness, which is the opposite of self-acceptance, is very, very likely to occur in a sensitive person. A sensitive person who was, of course, a sensitive child and noticed every little nuance of lack of acceptance, lack of approval coming from the main relationships in their environment. So that's one thing, you know, that extreme attunement to how people are responding to you, which makes for a lot of self-consciousness growing up. And and a lot of trying to get the approval rather than the disapproval. So that's certainly one aspect of it.
Now I know you work with people. I mean, that this book that you wrote, Belonging Here, came directly out of your work with clients. So when you work with people who have this kind of hyper sensitivity, if you will, to what's happening in their environment, how do you help them work with that and relax, really, about their hypersensitivity?
Yes, this seems like a good time to say that my eyes are being allergic and I'm just going to dry them. There they go. People who grow up with a lot of sensitivity often feel very different from other people. And in that difference, they often do abandon themselves very, for one thing, also a person with a lot of energy, sensitive people often have a lot of fluidity, a lot of streaming kind of energy. They can quite severely disconnect from themselves. The good news, of course, is that they can use that same sensitivity to come back more easily into themselves. But as children, they can disconnect from themselves quite intensely. So the work is just what I've been describing, is to make deeper and deeper contact internally, actually, with the internal space of one's being, and experience that. And then to experience that this same essence in oneself, I'm using the word essence, I don't mean it in a metaphysical way, but the same experience of ground and transparency and presence is the same in other people as well, right? It's in all of us. That's what's so amazing. It is really a ground of oneness. And that helps very much for people who have fragmented from themselves and felt extremely different from other human beings to come back into the world and into relationship with themselves and with others.
Judith, I wonder, here at the end of our conversation, I want to make sure that the people who are with us are really getting a sense of this embodiment process and this sense of touching, this inhabiting of ourselves. And I'm wondering if you could take us through just a short guided practice where we can touch the interior space of the body, so that especially people who are listening and this still sounds abstract for them, you can make it really real for them.
Yes. There's one way to really feel the difference between being aware of your body and actually being in it. And I can lead you through that pretty easily. And that is, sitting here now, listening to this, become aware of your hands. Just take a moment to become aware of your hands, and you may feel temperature of the hands, you may feel tension or lack of tension. So that's becoming aware of your hands. And now enter into your hands. See if you can feel that you are present within your hands. So you may be able to feel the difference there in terms of actually being present within your hands. And if you can feel that, then you can bring the same thing throughout your whole body, to feel present within your feet, actually living there, experiencing yourself living within your feet, within your legs, that sense of internal volume, right? That you exist, that you take up space internally in your legs, and taking a moment to actually experience yourself living there in your legs. Same thing in your whole torso, right? Take a moment to come into your torso, to be present, not just aware of it, but present within your torso, that you're living there, that that's who you are, part of who you are. Feel that you're in your arms, your hands. See if they can feel like your arms, your hands. Feel feel that you're present within your whole head, your whole brain, your whole face, and your whole neck. What does it feel like to actually experience yourself living within your neck? That's one we often leave out, by the way. Living within your whole brain, your whole head. And now taking a moment to live within your whole body all at once. Now, if you feel comfortable doing that, if you really feel some contact with that internal space of your body, then you can take a moment to find the space outside your body, the space in the room. And now to feel that the space inside and outside of your body is the same space, same continuous space, inside and out. It pervades you. So you're in your body, you're not leaving your body, but you're permeable. Space inside and outside is the same. And that space that pervades you also pervades everything around you. Mutual transparency, you and everyone else. If you're doing that with your eyes closed, open your eyes. See if you can still feel that. You're in your whole body. Even though the world appears, you still have that internal depth. Your whole self all at once inside. And that space pervading you and everything else.
That's such a simple and yet incredibly profound practice.
Thank you.
I wonder if it's fair to say that when we're in some kind of jag, if you will, where we're treating ourselves unkindly, if we could say, well, you're not inside the space of your body when that's happening. Do you think that's fair to say?
I sure think it would help to come inside deeper into your body and to make contact with yourself. It's a kind of loyalty to yourself to be in there.
I like that phrase, a kind of loyalty to yourself. I've been speaking with Judith Blackstone with Sounds True. Judith has created an audio learning series called The Realization Process, a step-by-step guide to embodied spiritual awakening. And she's also written two books with Sounds True, The Intimate Life, Awakening to the Spiritual Essence in Yourself and Others, and a book called Belonging Here, a guide for the spiritually sensitive person. Judith, thanks for being part of our self-acceptance project.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me.
SoundsTrue.com. Many voices, one journey.